The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Critical Care Update is presented by Dr. Timothy Barrero.
But that next, I'm going to go into the critical care aspect. It'll be just as fast as the first one. Focus on the questions. Right? And I'll try to pull out the salient key features. Okay, so why do we do this? Spit out information you need to know for the boards. So number one, a middle-aged man collapsed after the slot machine, so 777, right? He is unresponsive and has no pulse or respirations. The first correct intervention is A, chest compressions at 100 beats per minute, B, the use of AED by ACLS-trained personnel, C, provide 3 immediate shocks before CPR, D, establish airway and administer 12 breaths per breath. The answer is A, right? Why this is important, and because the boards will ask you a question on CPR because there was a change in the CPR guidelines. And that is a big, big thing for the boards to say, are your trainees prepared? And the answer is A. So the use B is not the answer because it says by trained personnel, anybody can use an AED, right? Provide 3 immediate shocks before CPR, come on now, right? Establish airway, we know it's no longer ABC, it is C, right? First, compressions. You are asked to be the ICU Stewardship Committee for Infectious Control. Get used to it, you're gonna be on some committee, and the antibiotic use. Which of the following evaluations proved to be the most successful in reducing ICU infections? A, education, B, proper hand washing, C, daily sedation vacation, D, nasal decontamination with Bactroban. Right? It's like find X, right? They're all good answers. Which one's the best? The answer is, yeah, B, proper hand washing. Okay, so A is important. It's part of all the vernacular of education. The problem is when no one's teaching, we all don't do it. When no one's watching, right, we walk out of the room and forget to wash our hands, so it's not as effective long-term. Daily sedation, vacation, they're all the correct answers. The best one is the simple, right? Use Mr. Soapy. All right, there have been many increase in methicillin-resistant Staph aureus in your ICU, and you are asked to provide action plan to address this situation, right? We see this all the time. Which of the following should you recommend? A, universal decolonization, B, gastrointestinal decolonization, C, targeted decolonization of the nares, and patient screening and contact isolation. The best answer is A, universal decolonization. Universal, everybody. If you're not sure, I didn't make it up. This was published in New England Journal of Medicine just a few years ago, so it is fair game for you. And it showed it reduces all cause bloodstream infections. Everybody see that? All cause bloodstream infections. Everybody gets chlorhexidine, everybody gets Bactroban. It reduces the risk of infections across the board. Next, what we're gonna do is take this lovely patient. We're gonna take them through sepsis and ARDS, and we're gonna make them better, right? So the same patient will apply to all the questions. A 69-year-old woman is brought to the emergency room from a nursing home because they're confused, fever, and have flank pain. They are febrile, have a high pulse, have a high respiratory rate, and their blood pressure is horrible, right? Physical exam shows all the signs and features of dehydration and septic shock, and they have a positive urine screen and metabolic acidosis with lactic acidosis. Everybody see the picture? We'll move on. Based on the presentation, which category is the patient currently in? A, this patient has SIRS. B, the patient describes sepsis. D, this clearly is severe sepsis. No, this patient has septic shock. The answer is D. The answer is D. So first, A no longer exists. Right? The new criteria eliminated SIRS. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a board question. Okay, it's going to be a board question. Severe sepsis is gone. There's no, all right. So the new criteria and the new screening is, right, if you think they have an infection, do the Q-SOFA, right, quick SOFA score. If greater than 2, you go on to do the SOFA score, right? If the SOFA score is greater than a 2, then you go on to determine end organ damage. That's the new criteria. And why it'll be a question because of this slide right here. Because what they found in hospital mortality and 1-year mortality, that the Q-SOFA score, right, was more sensitive than all the other scores. Everybody get that? Right? So that's why they want you to change from the SIRS criteria to the Q-SOFA score, because it's better identifying people who are going to have bad outcomes. We can all argue all the other points, but the answer is that's what they want you to know. If you're not sure, here's it. They got rid of severe sepsis. SIRS is no longer a thing. So there's your reference to that. If you're not sure what the Q-SOFA score, there it is. They're not going to ask you to calculate it, but the answer to know the concepts associated with the Q-SOFA score, and that's more important. Our same patient, right, just reviewing it just for your own identification, has lactic acidosis and thus was already in septic shock, okay? In conjunction with the patient above, appropriate antibiotics, which of the following choices likely to result in improved survival in the following patient with septic shock? A, placement of central venous catheter. B, aggressive early fluid resuscitation with crystalloids. C, maintaining a hemoglobin above 10. D, maintaining a CO2 below 50, administering systemic corticosteroids. And the answer is B. What you should know now is appropriate antibiotics and fluid. Everything else after that is based on the clinical acumen of the physician. That's what the ARISE, UPLIFT, and all the other studies showed. So the answer is, right, placement of the central venous catheter in protocol-driven therapy was proven not to be effective. So do you do it? The answer is sure. If your attending wants it, should you do it? Probably, right? But the answer is, do you need it for survival? The answer is no. So aggressive fluid resuscitation is extremely important. So we'll get to other questions regarding fluid later on. Hemoglobin question. If anybody answers hemoglobin transfusion as an ICU question, I'm going to come after you, right? The answer is don't do it, right? Same thing with E. There is no study that I know, right? If you're in anaphylaxis, right, you give IM epinephrine. If you're in angioedema, you protect the airway. There never steroids is going to be an answer. And because this, I'm not saying we don't do it, right? In your hospitals, we do it all the time, right? But this is a competency-based question. For the boards, don't answer systemic steroids. Okay, so PCO2, I don't even know why D's in there, right? I just put it. So appropriate antibiotics are extremely important, right? And that's, again, we should just know. Appropriate, right, based on where you think the site of infection and source control is extremely important. This is a wonderful study that says you will die if you don't get appropriate antibiotics after the time of hypotension, and the longer you do that, the more likely they are. Manny Rivers, God bless him, he's gone through a lot of controversies, but the answer, this is 17 years old, guys, and it will still be a board question for long as I know, and that is 30 cc's per kilogram is what they should get, and the fluid should be crystalloids, right? I know my doctors like to do, or we use this. For the boards, the answer is, right, good old normal saline, okay? If they ask you to monitor central venous oxygen or mixed venous saturation, this study proved you don't need to do it. So going back to how to monitor it, you may want to follow lactic acid, right? It's a nice marker to see whether or not you're improving, but it doesn't change survival, so don't do that. Protocol-dose therapy does not work. As is related to your patient, which of the following statements regarding sepsis fluid management treatment is correct? A, placement of central venous catheter. We're past that one now, right? B, monitoring mixed venous? No. D, aggressive fluid resuscitation at 30 cc's? Absolutely. Colloid to maintain IV fluid at 30 cc's per kilogram, right? And administrated albumin solution. This is an interesting study, and this is what I'm showing. Protocolized therapy is no longer needed. I suspect because 3 major studies done in multiple hospitals across, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, you're going to see an answer related to protocolized therapy and ICU treatment. And the answer is you give them fluids, you give them appropriate antibiotics, and what you do from there, right, is based on where you're at in clinical practice and how the patient responds to that. That's how I'd answer that. Those are the studies. They're there for you to review. Now, some people say, well, my doctors like to give lactated ringers, and my doctors like to give colloid therapy. And the answer is albumin and all those other stuffs and randomized control studies did not show any benefit. Some were equal to, but not better than, right? Equal to, but not better than. So, and when the answer is unclear, go with the cheaper form, which is good old normal saline. This is the study if you're not sure, and this is the other study looking at albumin. I'm not saying you can't do it because it's equal to, but it's not better than. The answer is going to be normal saline, right? So our same patient is now coming to your ICU. Despite your interventions, the same 69-year-old woman receives only 2 liters of fluid, right, over the 6 hours in your emergency room. And I know this happens everywhere, right? In your ICU, resuscitation is amped up, right, because you're all pissed off as the intern on call, right? And you notice the patient develops ARDS and oligonucleic renal failure by the next morning. Which of the following in this patient is the next step, is the best next step, includes which of the following? A, start dopamine for a mean arterial pressure of 60, B, administer high-dose vasopressin, C, start a lipid medication, D, transfuse, please don't do that, right? And E, start levofed for a MAP greater than 65. The answer is E, right? Start levofed. So let's get this out in the open. So dopamine is reasonable, right? But the answer is it leads to more tachyarrhythmias. So the primary pressure of choice in sepsis is levofed. Levofed, right? Administer high-dose vasopressin. No, it's low-dose vasopressin. Low-dose vasopressin should not be used alone in septic shock. It is add-on therapy. It is add-on therapy, okay? So C, it was studied, right? Because of its anti-inflammatory properties, right? So don't do it because it's just not there. Transfusion, we'll show the TRIST study in a second. Levofed. The first answer is not even correct because the mean arterial pressure says 60. The goal in septic shock is what? 65. So that's why A is not also the right answer. If you're not sure, I didn't make it up. It's proven in the literature, and here it is. Norepinephrine over dopamine. It is a better, not statistically significant better, but what you had was more adverse events, more tachycardias, more consultations to your lovely cardiologists, right? I guess their kids have to go to college too, right? So vasopressin is commonly asked all the time, well, doctor, what do you do if this pressure doesn't work and your mean arterial pressure doesn't meet goal? And the answer is the guidelines, even updated in 2006, said vasopressin is not better than norepinephrine, right? And there's the study, right? And if you're not sure, the answer is it's an add-on therapy, but it should not be used alone. Right? So the guidelines simply said norepinephrine. So you give them fluids, you see if they're fluid responsive. If they are, you give more fluids, right? If they're not fluid responsive, what do? And they're showing shock, you start norepinephrine. That's the answer. That's how you approach it. And if it still doesn't work and they're not fluid responsive, then you add vasopressin or epinephrine at the lowest doses as mentioned. Again, renal dose dopamine, come on, we're past that, right? Phenylephrine, right? Well, they were tachycardic, Dr. B, so we started norepinephrine or phenylephrine, right? Don't do that. The answer is they need more fluid if they're, right, tachycardic or hypertensive. Okay, so if you're not sure, again, I didn't make it up. Our mean arterial goal, right, proven in the literature is 65, not 60. They said, well, maybe we can do better, right? We thought like surgeons, right? If we just do more, if we just raised it a little bit higher, maybe everything would be better. And the answer in this study, right, called the SEPSAM study, proven that a higher mean arterial pressure was no better when they try to get it above 85. So 65 is your goal. Right, lipid-lowering medication is already proven. We don't use it. So again, I know there's lots of things out there. Go with what you know. If your hospital's not doing it, it's a little less likely. Here's the TRIST study, right? Does it show, right? Please, blood transfusions in the ICU. If it's not below 7, leave it alone, okay? That's what's proven. Here's the study looking at 7 versus 9, right? The answer is that if it's above 7, let it ride. Okay? If you're not sure, they looked at everything. They looked at your age. They looked at your gender. They looked at your, right, what's called your SAP score, how sick you are when you came into the ICU. And what they found, if it's greater than 7, transfusion's not the answer. Okay? So next, what's the patient who is oliguric? Our patient is now oliguric. The intern, on the MICU rotation wants to place a pulmonary artery catheter. I know, so you could start laughing, right? To obtain a pulmonary artery occlusion pressure. As opposed to your management, if this is done, it is most likely to result in which of the following single best answer? A, decreased 28-day mortality. B, decreased length of stay. C, no identified benefits. D, decrease the incidence of renal dysfunction. Fire the intern on the MICU rotation. I know you want to answer E, but the answer is there's no identifiable risks, right? For us old people in the room, we loved pulmonary artery catheters, but the answer is it is actually increases your risk. And again, it's not, right? It's been proven. This is a competency-based test. I didn't make it up. This is the famous ARTHNET study that looked at pulmonary artery catheters, and it showed no benefit in the management. We would even argue that it was even controversial that people knew how to read those. But nonetheless, the answer is don't put a Swan-Ganz catheter in, right? Don't put a central venous catheter in, right? It's not needed, right? So if someone has good IVs, then good. I'm not saying we don't do it. Again, this is the difference between what happens in clinical practice and what happens on the boards, right? Because your nurse is going to bug the heck out of you to put that central line in. I know it, right? I see it all the time, right? So yes, you're going to do it for the management of the patient, but for the boards, there's no survival benefit. Get the key? All right, so in our same 69-year-old woman, septic shock developed bilateral infiltrates and progressive hypoxemia. 40% of people in septic shock go into ARDS, right? A PFI2 ratio is less than, and I know Tim talked about this earlier, or we talked about this earlier, necessary mechanical ventilation. She is 5'3" inches tall and weighs 198 pounds. The respiratory therapist asks you, what's the best tidal volume for this ventilator? And your response is A, 314, B, 430, C, 540, 665. If you're guessing, you're in trouble. The answer is A, right? If you're not sure with this question, go with the lowest possible volume, okay? Right? Because it's always what you don't think. If you don't know how to calculate it, the answer is it's based on your height, right? Your ideal body weight. It's not your actual body weight. I wish I was my actual body, right? Or my ideal body weight. I'm far from that, right? So it is your ideal body weight. And from that, it's 6 cc's per kilogram. And if you're not sure this answer should be universal, this should be an easy point for you. It doesn't matter if you're in the surgical ward, MICU ward, neurosurgical ward, or getting routine appendectomy. The answer has been proven in the literature. 6 cc's per kilogram is your starting point. Okay, so probability of surviving discharge with ARDS with lung protective strategies, and that is proven in the ARDSnet study despite its controversy, and it's been a question now at least 15 years, right? Which of the following statement is correct? Single answer about the Berlin definition of ARDS in patients with a PAF ratio of 85. A, this category is moderate ARDS. B, because she has urosepsis, this is not ARDS. C, her predicted hospital mortality is less than 20%. D, the need for wedge pressure to determine acute lung injury. Don't do it, right? E, none of the above is true, right? The answer is D, E, none of the above is true. Let's get this out in the open. I know it was already mentioned. Why Berlin criteria is very important is because you will need to know this to adjust your management for patients in ARDS. So if you don't know it, please learn it. So, right, this is the Berlin criteria. Let me go back. So, first of all, ARDS is a syndrome. If you have the features, you have the syndrome, right? It's that simple. Moderate ARDS, less than 100 is severe, okay? So know the severe. All the other ones, there's really no treatment modality that necessarily changes. But in severe, and I'm going to show you that, so don't panic, right? You need to know that 100 level, right? We don't need a wedge pressure. I showed you that already, right? So the answer is already shown. This is the Berlin criterion. Why they changed it? Because it better defines the cohort. One of the problems with ICU medicine, it's hard to really change the vernacular or how the treatment strategy as far as mortality because so many variables are involved. But what they did is shown this. So if you have severe ARDS, 45%, 45%, less than 100. Right? And why this is important, we'll go. So your patient is currently on 0.6 or 60% FiO2 on a cyst control, set rate of 22, and a tidal volume of 6 cc's per kilogram. You know how to calculate that now, right? The PEEP is 14, the blood gas is shown, right? The plateau pressure on the ventilator is 41. What, if anything, is needed at this point? The patient's care to improve survival. A, do nothing. B, place the chest tube. C, start bronchodilators. D, adjust the ventilator. The answer is? Oh, the silence is deafening. Adjust the ventilator, okay? Here's the key. All the numbers look great except one. Which one doesn't look good? The plateau pressure, right? So we'll go over that. It should be less than 30. If it's not, adjust the ventilator, right? Hopefully you answered adjust the ventilator. Then now, how would you change the ventilator in hopes to improve survival? And I showed you the respiratory end parameters there. A, lower the respiratory rate to allow permissive hypercapnia. No survival benefit. B, increase the ventilator's flow rate, right? That would actually worsen everything, right? C, lower tidal volume to compliance less than 30. D, change the airway pressure, change the airway release pressure ventilation. The answer is C, right? So you start at 6. If the plateau pressure is above 30, you lower it, right? And if you lower it to 4 cc's and it's above 30, what do? Lower it. And if it's still above that, what do? Lower it. And if it's still above 30, what do? Lower it. Get the point, right? Your goal plateau pressure has to be less than 30. There's other things that you'll do along the way, and I get that, but know that key point, right? So change the airway pressure release ventilation. There may be many different hospitals across the U.S. that use all these fancy notes. Dr. B, we use pressure control. Dr. B, we use APVR. We use bi-level. The answer is there has been no study, ready? No study that shows one ventilator mode is better than the other. The key is how you use the ventilator, and that is 6 cc's per kilogram, follow the plateau pressure. This is the answer. This is the study. It's proven over and over again. Get it less than 30 or your patient will do poorly. And the patient in hospital day six, right? His plateau pressure is 28. Yay, right? PCO2 is 47. AC, 70%, PEEPA 14, PFI to ratio remains at 85, less than 100 severe. Which of the following treatment improves survival? A, start ECMO. B, palliative care consult. C, start prone ventilation. D, add neuromuscular blockade. Best answer is C. Right. Key to this, day 6, right? So there's a little feature in there. In other words, the same patient, severe ARDS. Severe ARDS is different. Two modalities. I should do it this way. These two are reasonable. Now you need to know the day that you're on. Listen, we all have survived. We've all had the pleasure of getting someone through severe ARDS on ECMO, right? They're great stories. We should all write it in humanities books. The answer is there's no study. And for every one that you save, God willing, right, unfortunately, we use many. So it's never going to be the answer. Palliative care consult. The only way palliative care consult will be a board answer is that if you have cancer. The study is actually quite interesting. If you have a diagnosis of cancer and you consulted palliative care, you actually live 3 months longer, regardless of the treatment, right? So God bless them, right? But for ICU, the answer is we do it, but it doesn't improve survival. Not an ARDS or septic shock. So D, C is the answer. D is reasonable, but because day 6, we can't answer it. And if you're not sure, again, I didn't make it up. This is the famous French study published in New England Journal of Medicine, so it is fair game. Looked at multi-center double-blind study using the onset of severe ARDS and neuromuscular blockade. The key to this is they started it early, within 48 hours. Right? If your patient has a PFI2 ratio less than 100, neuromuscular blockade with Cisatricurum or Nimbex, right, did a lot of great things. So if you have that patient and you're lowering that tidal volume because their plateau pressures are still high, get them paralyzed in the first 48 hours. If their PAO ratio is greater than 200, the answer is you don't paralyze them. The interesting part of this study was before the Bellerin criteria. So the number they used was actually 150. But I'm going to make it easy for you. They're not going to make it hard. They're going to put it severe or they're not going to put it severe because they want to test your competency, not try the gray area along the board. How am I doing for time, right? So this is the study that they looked at. This is prone positioning. Listen, prone positioning is interesting for those older folks in the room, attendings that used to deal with this on a regular basis. There was multiple studies that showed no benefit until this one came across the board. And again, what it's shown is prone positioning, anytime the PFI2, and improved oxygenation, and it lowered long-term goals. And that's what you see, prone positioning versus not. There's a survival benefit there in patients with severe ARDS. Right? So you can use it anytime in their course, neuromuscular blockade within the first 48 hours. That's how I would address that from a competency-based standpoint. Right? Any questions so far? We'll move on. Which of the following statement regarding management of this patient with severe ARDS is true? A, neuromuscular blockade should be used for mild to moderate. That's false. B, high-frequency oscillating ventilation is an early choice to establish is an early choice as established by recent randomized control study. High-frequency oscillator ventilation. Again, there is no mode of ventilation that's better than any other mode, but how you use the ventilator is extremely important. Prone positioning in the management management strategy severe ARDS, that is true. Corticosteroids, please, right? Do not answer corticosteroids on the board. Okay, early tracheotomy, there is no role for early tracheotomy. There's no role for late tracheotomy. The answer is that's merely somewhat of an economics thing. If you look at the long-term studies in tracheotomy, the long-term survival is actually quite poor, but I don't think they're gonna ask you anything from that standpoint, right? So all your hard work, congratulations, applause, it says. You're now day six in the same patient with severe ARDS. Sepsis is out of shock and off vasopressors. Out of shock and off vasopressors. Remain sedated on the ventilator and you're not sure of her fluid status, which is a common thing. For this patient is stabilized and out of shock, the ventilator is being gradually reduced. Which of the following steps in management is shown to helpful in reducing ventilator days, ICU days, and improving oxygenation? Not survival, right? A, avoid diuretics and keep the CVP 12. B, give diuretics and minimize fluids to get a goal CVP of less than 4. D, transfuse, please, if you raise your hand, all right. Start steroids, all right. Once the patient passes a spontaneous breathing tile, continue sedation, discontinue sedation. The answer is B, right? Give diuretics. So this was the famous, right, FACT study. The key to this, the FACT study enrolled people out of shock. Not in shock, right? Out of shock. So know your subtleties between your management. And what they did is they took conservative versus non-conservative strategies, right? And they diuresed people. And they reduced length of stay, ICU length of stays and days on the ventilator, but not survival. Not survival. What they found is that routine physicians, exactly what it showed, would be 12 to 15 liters positive in their patients. So once you get someone out of shock in the ICU, you should start to diurese them. That's the way the boards are going to ask you, okay? So decrease ventilator days, decrease ICU, and improve oxygenation. Our legendary patient now. Right, is hospital day 8. Examination reveals scattered coarse breathing sounds. After 20 minutes of a spontaneous breathing trial, blood pressure is good, pulse rate is adequate, respiratory rate's a little high, but okay, less than 35. Oxygenation is good on 35%. The spontaneous breathing trial is without evidence of arrhythmia, respiratory distress, diaphoresis, and anxiety. Chest radiograph shows clearing. Which of the following is most appropriate? A, obtain arterial blood gas. B, continue mechanical ventilation and reassess. C, extubate and discontinue mechanical ventilation. D, extubate and initiate non-invasive mechanical ventilation. Answer is C. Okay, there is no role for blood gases in spontaneous breathing trial. There are many different ways your hospitals may do it, but I don't care what your hospital does. I care what the boards want you to know, and that's based on evidence. And that is, someone should get a spontaneous breathing trial, which is discontinuation of the ventilator. That's the best study. For 30 minutes, not 2 hours. And at 30 minutes, if their spontaneous breathing index or rapid shallow breathing index is less than 105, you're 86% likely to be extubated, and you should extubate them. This is different than the patient's that were proven in COPD. If you have COPD and you're intubated, right, for acute hypercapnic respiratory failure and you pass your spontaneous breathing trial, then non-invasive ventilation works. We're talking about a septic shock patient, right? And that's extremely important. So once you meet your spontaneous breathing trial, you extubate them. You don't reassess, okay? And that's the key. Which of the following is true regarding post-ICU recovery? This is a really hot topic, right? And I expect to see something related to this. This is Wes Eli's group. Most sepsis survivors are back to work at 6 months. There is cognitive impairment post-sepsis, even in mild disease. C, there is nothing that can be done to improve post-ICU recovery. D, daily interruption of sedation has the least impact on post-ICU recovery. Best answer is B, right? So most survivors of sepsis aren't back to work in 6 months. Far from it. May take a year to 2 years, depending, especially in severe ARDS. There is significant cognitive impairment and anybody who undergoes sepsis, septic shock, and ARDS, severe. And that cognitive impairment may be permanent, and that was proven in New England Journal of Medicine. There's nothing you can do. The answer is yes, there's a lot you can do. We just showed you all the things you should be doing to try to do that. Okay? And daily interruption of sedation is extremely important in someone who's not in shock, right, to do on a regular basis to get them out of the ICU on a regular basis. This was a study published in JAMA in 2010, West Eli's group. And what you see there is people are significantly impaired coming out of the ICU. This is where the concept of the best sedative in the ICU is fentanyl. Not propofol, not Ativan, right, is fentanyl. The cognitive defects seem to be more evident in benzodiazepines. It is definitely true that intermittent doses of fentanyl is ideal in the ICU, even in ARDS. Okay? So, according to the 2000, this is my, I think, close to my last one, according to the 2006 new updates, management for patients in the literature support the following grade one best evidence randomized controlled study. A, plateau pressure should be maintained less than 30. True. Ventilator weaning protocols with spontaneous breathing trial. True. Sedative protocols and minimize of sedation. True. All the above is the answer. Okay? All those are grade one evidence of things you should be doing. So in conclusion, give them the appropriate antibiotics, give them 30 cc's of crystalloid therapy, right? No CVP or pulmonary artery occlusion pressure. Aftershock resolves, start diuresis. Treatment of ARDS is still a syndrome. Use your Berlin criteria to determine what other modalities you use. Keep your plateau pressure less than 30. Spontaneous breathing trial helps reduce cognitive dysfunction. Thank you for your time.